This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Listening to history.
We got out of the chattel slavery, and I was better off for getting out, but Rosa don't think so. She says all we got freed for is to starve to death. She says her white folks were good to her, but don't you expect me to love my white folks.
I never did know nothing about my pa, but I looked on my mama like a savior. Her name was Hannah Clemon, and Dr. Andrews, my master, had always owned her.
This history, Slave Narratives of Jack and Rosa Maddox, were brought to life by an HBO documentary, the voices of actor Ozzie Davis and Sarah Daly. And all Americans can take a step closer to that history of slavery and more, the broader history of African Americans, when the long-awaited National Museum of African American History and Culture opens in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. A century in the making. Its origins date back to 1915, when black Civil War veterans began raising funds to honor black troops. In a sense, it is not unlike the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, which when it opened, I remember in 1982, became a sacred place of national pilgrimage for those who experienced the war, those who did not, those who suffered a lost loved one, and those who felt the need to pay homage to those who did. When President Obama rings in the official opening tomorrow, it will be from a 500-pound bell from First Baptist Church in Williamsburg, Virginia, a church founded by slaves and free blacks back in 1776. The tolling of the bell and the opening of the museum dedicated to the African American experience is a milestone in a history still unfolding today. Joining us are two people who visited the museum at a special reception last weekend. Gail Jessup White is a direct descendant to Thomas Jefferson, who has been sharing history for years as part of the Thomas Jefferson Foundation at Monticello in Virginia. And Don Felder, cousin to the late trailblazing tennis player Althea Gibson, who paved the way for the Williams sisters. Felder brought one of Gibson's tennis rackets to the museum, where it is now on display. For both of them, this is a homecoming and a place for sharing history near to where so much was made during the Civil Rights Movement. Crowds on the National Mall then, more crowds will come tomorrow.
I was there last Saturday, and I was among 3,000 very happy guests who've waited so many years for this museum to open. I grew up in Washington, D.C., among the greatest museums in the world, and they were all free, which was a wonderful thing about growing up in Washington. And we've been waiting for this for 100 years, when the idea of this museum first percolated from black veterans of the Civil War in 1915. So tomorrow is going to be, Saturday is going to be a tremendous day, and last Saturday was a tremendous day. You were there, Don. We didn't see each other, but...
right. And I agree. It was exciting. It was sort of a relief that finally the history of our people is there for the world to see and have a better understanding of a people.
It also seems that this moment is something unique to Washington, D.C., in that it brings out a communal sense of relief from all races and all members of the community and all citizens who can finally share a history, even though it may have affected us all differently. I remember when the Vietnam Veterans Memorial opened, it seemed like everyone in town had a part of that. And Washington is the only city that's really capable of doing that sort of thing. Does it feel like that to you, Don?
It absolutely did. I mean, people were excited. I took Uber, and there were Africans who would drop me off and pick me up, and they wanted to know what it was like there, what was inside, and they saw people coming every day. Gail, you saw people there during the last Saturday's reception. Everyone was there.
And if I just may add to what Don has said, yes, this is a history of African Americans, but this is also American history. It belongs to all of us. I know that African Americans have a very special place for this museum, but this is also America's museum.
At a time when there are so many difficult conversations taking place about race and tension and fear, I think, among peoples, this place really does hold out the promise of allowing people to see with some clarity America's history rather than to live in their own bubbles. And this comes at the perfect time, wouldn't you say, Don?
You're absolutely right, John. I think that best describes it. Clarity.
You're a part of the history in that you actually donated an artifact that can be seen, I believe, in the museum.
Yes, I donated a number of Althea's personal possessions. And, of course, I saw only the tennis racket when I was there. But when I walked through the door, my first thought was, they now have a home. They have a place where, you know, they're among great people, their voices are heard, their story is now told, and I think they'd be very proud just to know that they're receiving the recognition that they are today.
Althea Gibson's tennis rackets. I imagine a lot of people packed up some boxes and brought it down to the museum. Gail, I suspect quite literally you're a part of the history as well.
I feel honored that that you would say that I'm part of the history. Certainly, the enslaved community of Monticello is part of that history. There's an exhibit there of Thomas Jefferson, and behind him, it's in bronze, and behind him are more than 600 bricks with the names of every enslaved person there, and some of my relatives' names are on those bricks. Some of those names, if I may say, Lucy, Sally, Henry, Anderson. It brought tears to my eyes to see my ancestors and my relatives recognized, to know that their lives will be remembered in their names. That's very significant. And it's emblematic of the work that we're doing at Monticello and of work that's going on at other historic sites. So it was a very memorable evening.
You got to go see it. It tells a story. It tells the story of a people. From start to until today, I mean, from the voyages and every nationality that took part in this trade is there, is visible. You know who. I spent a lot of time in Ghana. And, you know, most people go to Ghana and they go to two slave forts, Elmina and Cape Coast. There are others that were operated by the Swedes, by the Danes. So this tells the story.
Gail, what's an example of an arresting, perhaps even alarming image and artifact that you would see in the museum, and then something that would express maybe even hope or a sense of solidarity, like we understood back in the 60s, that sometimes seems hard to remember today?
The museum has 35,000 artifacts, and many of them profound, including Rosa Parks' dress and Harriet Tubman's shawl. There's also a segregated rail car. There is the Bible of Nat Turner. So there's so many symbols of the struggle of African-American people, and there are also symbols of the resilience and the accomplishments and of African Americans, and you can see that in the culture exhibits. A couple of things stood out for me, and these are on the upper floors. On the lower floors, you see the exhibits about slavery, and then and as you go from slavery to freedom, to borrow from John Hope Franklin, when you get to the upper floors, you see the emergence of blacks and their culture. And on that floor, what stood out for me was something I've been hearing about for so long, and this would be Parliament Funkadelic's Mothership.
No kidding.
And if you think of Parliament Funkadelic housed forever in the sacred grounds of the Smithsonian, it's just wonderful. And that brought me so much joy and excitement. So from slavery to freedom, absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree, Gail. And just the thought that people were housing these things. You know, when I went to my family's home in Petersburg, Althea's mother's former home, the family members had items in boxes, in shoe boxes, no less. And that's when I said, these things belong in a museum.
And did you carry with you some of the thoughts of this past week, the shootings in Tulsa and Charlotte, and even the history over the last 2 years that have echoed incidents like that, as you went into the museum?
I did not. When I walked into the museum, my first thought was, they have a home. You know, their voices are heard. That was my first thought. And it was only as I emerged to the eras of today did I see and have thoughts of what's going on today. Because that's represented there as well.
I felt the same way. When I walked in that building, when I saw all those happy people, I put all my cares behind. Just wanted to enjoy that moment. Everything was wonderful about it. The music was fantastic. There was a violinist playing Lift Every Voice and Sing, the Negro National Anthem. She was very talented, and one didn't want to think of anything but that moment and the accomplishment of that moment. So all cares left behind.
Absolutely.
And when today's headlines seem to want to pull us back to the past and mistrust and fear of the past, that's also a part of now. It seems as though for both of you, this museum was a way of stepping forward into a future where the past is recognized, celebrated, and, you know, the secrets are gone in some way. And that feels like a real American kind of celebration. Gail?
Yes, we have to continue with the conversations. We have to face our history. We have to have more transparency. You mentioned the shootings, back to reality. We have to have transparency with those shootings and understand why they're happening. And as I said to a group of police chiefs yesterday, we have to look at the eyes of people who don't look like us and still see our brothers and sisters. So, yes, it feels American.
Gail Jessup White and Don Felder, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank
you, John.
Gail Jessup White is the Community Engagement Officer at the Thomas Jefferson Foundation at Monticello. And Don Felder is the cousin to the late tennis player, African-American Althea Gibson.